Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, happy fifth day of existence to the Barclays Center, New York's newest, biggest building at the corner of Flatbush and Atlantic on Brooklyn's Atlantic Yards. Jay-Z is still in the midst of his opening run of concerts. Soon the Nets will play their first game, and the reviews are coming in after one weekend of action. So let's talk to the architects behind the arena design. Greg Pascarelli and Chris Sharples are partners at the design firm Shop. They were brought in by the developer Bruce Ratner to design the first major league sports arena in Brooklyn in almost 50 years. Dodgers take that. Greg, Chris, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
And listeners, we have about 10 minutes for this segment, so we're going to ask you to keep your questions or remarks short. But the phones are open, particularly those of you who have attended one of the Jay-Z shows or who live in the area and have gotten a good look at the Barclays Center, at least from the outside. And we have the architects here. Let's keep our conversation to the arena's design. We've spoken many times and will continue to discuss the contentious development at Atlantic Yards. But it's architecture and design and user-friendliness today at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, guys, there's a bit of a parlor game in terms of trying to find the right analogy to describe what the arena looks like. From the outside, I've heard a whale because of its long arching top, or Boba Fett, the character from Star Wars, a George Foreman grill, our favorite. Have you heard these, and do you have any favorites?
Yes, actually, we have heard them. I think we like the clam, the really angry clam one.
You know, when you think about a design of a building that's that large and sits in a neighborhood, you have to think about how you break down the scale and how you have to think about materiality. And you know, we're excited that it's a cutting edge piece of architecture that's getting people talking about buildings.
And I'm not sure if you've read the reviews, but I'm surprised by the range, even when it comes to the same thing. For instance, Alexandra Lang in the New Yorker calls it an alien presence. And right, all you can see is the Barclays Center because it is big, because it is dark, because it is without scale. But then Justin Davidson in New York Magazine says the arena lies relatively low on the skyline. Its tanned hues a camouflage against the borough's palette of brownstone and brick. From a couple of quiet residential blocks away, you might not even suspect it was there. So one sees it as an imposition without scale. The other sees it nestled in camouflage. How do you explain that?
Well, I think that anytime you push the boundaries of what you're doing from a design perspective, you expect to get a little friction, and you expect to have some difference in opinion, and that's exciting. We love the fact that the building could be read in multiple ways.
Tom in Park Slope, you're on the air. Have you seen it in person?
Yes, I live in the area, and I see it quite frequently. I don't mind the size or the color of it, but when I see a big rusty structure, I remember demoralization and decay and neglect. And were you aware of that Brooklyn sensitivity? And can you please try to convince me why I should not feel that way when I look at it?
And describe this rust color for people who haven't seen it. Is it like, you know, distressed jeans, like pre-rusted metal?
Well, yeah. It looks like the West Side Highway rusting.
Yeah. Well, so, Chris, what about that?
It's weathering steel that we use for the building. And really, you know, the thing is that we really saw this building, it had to have some attitude. I mean, the first thing is that we really believed it had to be made out of a natural material, a material that would patina, something that we've done all along with a lot of our work. And the thing is, we really believe this is the right color. It really works within the context. I mean, Brooklyn has attitude. And, you know, it built battleships and aircraft carriers. It was a manufacturing town. We feel that this building sort of responds to the history and also looks towards the future.
Over time, by the way, can rust rust?
It's already pre-rusted, basically. And the patina will get more and more rich and warm. But, I mean, we felt that to do a building that's a kind of painted color would make it more like a shopping mall. If we made it stainless steel, it would feel like it's in L.A. If we covered it in granite, it would be like a Manhattan bank. And And for us, it was about this mix of sort of grit and glamour that we think Brooklyn is really about.
Nick in Windsor Terrace, you're on the air. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
So I was deeply, deeply opposed to the whole thing, and still am, probably won't buy a ticket for a long while. And I thought it was ugly, I confess, when I saw it being built and without lights. But the other night I was walking by it and saw it all lit up with the lines and the lights coming through the rust in this specific way, and I got it and felt this weird sense of pride having it in my neighborhood that I really, really didn't want to have.
Well, that's really exciting to us, Nick. Thank you. And we think that it's going to continue to engage the neighborhood. And as the housing gets built around it, I think the entire city is going to understand how it works as a composition, where you'll have retail around the blocks, you'll have residential entrances, you'll have the arena. It will really come to life over the coming years.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi. The shop contribution to the arena mostly involved putting the wreath of weathering steel around the earlier airplane hangar design. I'd like to know how much of the wreath is expected to remain if and when all the residential buildings that are supposed to be built around the arena are ever built.
And both of you are shaking your heads like that was not an accurate characterization. Chris?
Well, I wasn't completely clear, but there are residential buildings that will go around the arena. In a way, they become the backdrop. And then the first one, as was brought up during the ribbon cutting a week ago Friday, is going to start in December with the construction of Tower B2.
And it remains to be seen, after all the contention and the changes in the economy, how many buildings and of what scale will actually end up surrounding the Barclays Center. But how much of the design of the building has to do with what you expected to be coming rather than what's already there?
Well, there was a big change. The original design, the Frank Gehry plan, integrated the arena into the base of four buildings. And when they couldn't finance those four buildings in the economic downturn of 2008 and 2009, the design had to change to a standalone structure. And then so that was really the big change. And so we worked very closely with AECOM, who did a lot of the bowl design, and we did the exterior, but then also all of the interior design as well, working in conjunction with them. So we didn't just do the wrapper, but as Chris just said, it was about making the transition between a building that was completely hidden to a building that was now a standalone object with a composition of the three residential buildings as the backdrop buildings behind it. So to answer the question of the previous caller, the facade that you see now, the halo that we call it, the bands, they will remain when the residential buildings go in, and you will always be able to see them, but the composition will change.
How about the inside? Because that's part of the design too. And when you're designing a building like this, there are lots of commercial demands from the beginning. Luxury boxes, vendors, Jay-Z's 40-40 Club. How constrained were you in terms of what you were working with?
Actually, we didn't feel we were constrained at all. I think what was really important for us, and this is something that's really unique to this arena, is the way that it connects itself to the streets around it. The fact that when you come out of the transit hub, on the plaza, you can see right into the building, into the bowl, and see the scoreboard. This is really the only arena we can think of that actually does that. So really, we wanted that direct connection between the pedestrian on the street right into the main concourses of the building.
And very important question. What's the bathroom ratio like? Are women going to have to stand in line twice as long as men?
There are officially more bathroom fixtures in the women's room than the men's rooms. So it should be okay.
Let's get one more caller on. Michael in Crown Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. Michael,
Hi.
Are you there? Hi.
Yes. I was just wondering, it seems like the VIP section, which the entrance to that is on the Atlantic Avenue side, there was just a tremendous amount of activity and the sidewalks hadn't really been expanded enough to accommodate that. And I was just wondering what the decision was to put the entrance there as opposed to maybe on the Atlantic, the Flatbush Avenue side.
Yeah, and related, one notable incident that's been in the news is that at the end of the concert, when the flood of people headed across the street to get into the Atlantic Center forced police to shut down Atlantic Avenue for 10 minutes. So are there problems with sidewalk design overall?
No, I think the goal here was to really privilege, you know, the relationship of the main entry to the plaza. And that's why we pushed the VIP entrance to the side. The other thing that's important, which you'll start to notice as you start to go inside, is what separates the VIP from the main lobby is the practice court. So the whole idea was to really open that up so people from the street can actually look in and see that. And so that's one reason why the VIP entrance is located on that side.
So in our last 30 seconds, lots of stadiums have cool nicknames. The University of Florida has the Swamp. The Yankees have the house that Ruth, now George, built. Tampa Stadium is called the Big Sombrero because it looks like a hat. Have you thought about a nickname for the Barclays Center? Maybe the Big Debit Card or the Foreman on Flatbush?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, we'll see what happens in the coming years with the Nets, who are going to be a fantastic team with current ownership, and we'll see. But you know, I don't know, maybe we'll call it the Oculus is the rim or something.
The swoosh.
we're very excited about it, though.
The Swoosh. And with reason to be very excited, seeing that it's always exciting for architects to see their designs come to life in the real world, right?
That is true.
So congratulations to Greg Pascarelli and Chris Sharples, partners at the design firm Shop, designing the Barclays Center. Thank you both.
Thank you very much, Brian.